shares of IT services firms have had a fantastic run during 2020 and 2021 when the COVID pandemic was raging. But the sector has been out of favor with investors in 2022 and has underperformed the Nifty as well as most other sectors. I'm Santosh Nair in conversation with Ronak Omkar, Head of Research at Parag Parikh Financial Advisory Services. In the special Money Control podcast, Ronak shares his thoughts on why the market does not seem to share the IT company's optimism about the near-term outlook, and also the key things that investors should keep an eye out for when investing in IT services companies. Ronak, glad to have you with us here, and thank you for agreeing to do this podcast.
Santosh, thanks for having me. It's my pleasure.
Okay, Ronak, before I start asking you questions on IT services companies, I just wanted to know, now you've been tracking companies since 2008. So tell our listeners, how did you get into the field of equity research? Was it something you were always interested in?
That's an interesting question to start with. I was not always interested in equity research. In fact, during my graduation, which I did in Bachelor's of Science in IT, BSc IT, at that time, the course was an interesting course, which was a compressed version of the engineering IT course. Mm-hmm. And I felt that it will equip me very well to participate in the IT industry as a software developer or any other role. That was my overall trajectory in life. I never wanted to be into finance or equity research. But I think somewhere around second year of my IT, I was just naturally curious to understand that if you are entering an industry, how does this industry work? What is the economics of the industry? And I was really interested in investing because of reading about Warren Buffett, etc. So that led me to read more about the IT industry. Mm-hmm. And now I joke about it, but it's essentially I feel that at that time I felt that working in an IT company might be a little bit worse than actually owning IT company shares. That might be better. So that's why I chose the field of equity research and went into finance and changed my track completely.
So you chose IT services as your area of specialization. Now, since that was your subject in engineering as well, did that make the decision easier?
So I don't think it was easy because the interesting part is what is taught in the curriculum of most of the engineering and IT services equips you to understand your role as a software developer or a unit of work that is given to you as an employee of a larger organization, like a product company or a services company.
Okay.
But you don't really get a chance to understand how the business actually functions. So mm-hmm. there are a lot of things. So although now that I've tracked it over a period of time, I can simplify it. But at that time, while starting to understand this industry, it is very hard to understand what the actual economics is. We know from experience and media interactions about this industry that it is an outsourcing industry. Like mm-hmm. cheaper labor is available here. That's why work is sent to India, which Correct. Is an oversimplification in my view. But mm-hmm. it is broadly accurate. I mean, that is what the industry is all about. And that is something that is lost in the overall education system. They don't teach it. And in fact, IT services companies have compensated a lot in terms of creating the university kind of a culture within their company to keep this continuous training going for even graduates who have graduated from the engineering courses.
Okay.
So it doesn't become easy. So it is essentially you need to learn the economics also. You need to understand what are the key things. And also the biggest problem for anyone is the jargon that is used in the industry.
Okay, we'll get to the jargon in a bit. But tell us, Ronak, how do you research the companies that you are expected to cover?
So I think there are several sources. So generally, when you research something and you want to individually understand a business, you use a concept called as bottom-up reading. So you read about that specific company by basically reading everything you can find about it in the public domain. Mm-hmm. Read there. So if it's a listed business, you start with the obvious documents like the annual report, the conference call transcripts, or management interviews, whatever is available in public domain about the company said by the management of the company or said by any other related party who is linked to the company, say a customer or a vendor of that company, whoever has said anything about it, you can basically Google your way through understanding that particular business.
Okay.
But to see where this company fits in the overall scheme of things in the industry, a little bit of a top-down view is required. And for that, there are not too many things available. So there is an organization called as Gartner, which mm-hmm. does a lot of surveys. They are essentially consultants to tell people where every IT business stands. And that's a good resource to start with. And just like Gartner, there are, I think, four or five other consultants who also have their own reports that keep coming up. That also gives you a fair idea of where things stand. So I think from a reading point of view, going back to the source of the company's investment publications that they have, the annual reports, the quarterly statements, conference calls. That's a fundamental resource of doing this. In fact, while studying this industry, I was a bit challenged because there was not too many written material about this business. Like media would cover this industry, but it was more seasonal as to what was happening at that point in time. So that also gives a good context. If you go into the media archives about the industry, about a certain topic, you actually see the cycles playing out, and then you can superimpose them on the numbers of the business to see that how the business has performed as per that particular cycle. We'll come to this little later. I'll explain to you in detail. But the other challenge of this industry is not too many people have written books about this industry, or there are not too many like simplified interviews of founders who will talk about it. So, for example, if somebody Google's search for an interview by Larry Page of Google, he will explain the business to you in some of the older videos that is there. You understand what is happening.
Okay.
But IT services essentially is a business-to-business kind of a service where you're selling to other businesses. So it's generally not talked about in simplified detail. People talk in jargon, but they don't talk in simplified detail like a simple person would understand. But now it's changing. There are several books that have come up in the recent past. It actually give a good flavor of how the Indian IT industry has evolved. So one such book is, I think I will just mention quickly. This is Harish Mehta, who was the founder of one of the founders of NASSCOM. He wrote a book called The Maverick Effect. He's also the MD of a listed IT business called Onward Technologies. There's another book which is written by the founder of Cyient, the listed company in India, Mr. BVR Mohan Reddy. He wrote a book called Engineered in India. It's a very interesting book because it gives you a very good flavor. Right from the late 70s to 80s, 90s, the environment which IT companies have come up, and the 2000s, where they actually peaked, they took the growth trajectory to a different level altogether. So it's a good top-down context to have as well if you're studying this business from scratch. And then going to the company financials and understanding that is also very useful.
So you would be speaking to the managements as well, right?
Occasionally, yes. Not all the time.
And tell us something interesting that you stumble upon, you know, when, as you said, you speak to vendors as well and other stakeholders. Is there any big variance between what you found when you read upon the company and what you actually found out when you spoke to people at the ground level?
So this is a bit like the story of the elephant, where if you blindfold different people and make them stand around an elephant and make them touch the elephant and say, describe what you, which part of this, who is this animal? So basically people don't know it's an elephant, but they will touch the trunk and they will say, oh, it looks like a tree. They will touch the belly and, oh, it looks like a wall. So people will have different interpretations of the same thing. So I think talking to different people is just to collect the understanding from different people and then you piece it together at your end because you are looking at a business from a top-down view. So essentially, there are several aspects to this business. So one part is, of course, a technical part as to what is technically happening. So if, because of the virtue of being in the industry, I have a lot of in the college days, I've been through this. I have several friends in the industry. I can talk to them saying, what is happening in so-and-so technology? So what is happening in cloud computing? What is happening in this particular services aspect? So I can talk to them about that. Then over a period of time, I've also spoken to recruiters who have had decades of experience in recruiting for the IT industry. From them, you get an understanding of how some of the hiring and firing cycles work in this industry. How is the HR managed in this particular industry? When you talk to IT salespeople, it's also a very interesting cohort of people to speak with because they have a very different view of the IT industry. So although we look at a technological part more generally when we talk about these industries, but the sales part is also very important because there's not too much differentiation between various companies. So how do different companies sell? What are the key talking points about different products, different services? That's an interesting point of view to gather. So once you gather all this information, this is not a definitive source anyway. This is basically anecdotes. You need to understand how the industry works from some idea as to what the real world looks like. And then you piece it together with the financial information. And if you have a long enough timeline to hold these businesses, then it makes a lot of sense to do all this work. Because if you're trading on a quarter-to-quarter or a couple of years basis, then this information gathering probably has no meaning. You just are trading on the stock price. Mm-hmm. But in the longer-term trends, you can actually figure out how things are changing over a period of time. And you keep repeating that process because you want to update yourself. Because the industry, IT industry has a unique feature. It has gone through several upgrade cycles. As technology has upgraded, the companies have also moved on from selling different services to the same clients. So it's a very interesting trajectory to track by talking to different people and different I think people in the value chain of this industry.
So, Rod, how different are the business models of the top four IT services company? I mean, to a lay investor, it looks like all of them are in the same line. So, could you throw some light on that?
Yeah. So, before I give that answer, I will just zoom out a little and just give you a broader perspective as to what IT companies sell, actually.
Okay.
So, if you see, there are three main lines of sales. One is your consulting part, where the IT company might have technological expertise in understanding a certain industry. For example, if an IT company is selling to a FMCG consumer company, some IT services to that industry, they will know that they have worked with several clients in the past and how they are managing their IT ecosystem. They will help them with some business solutions or some software or services, and that can be implemented at the client end. So that is one way of gaining revenue in this business. Like, in consult and tell other people how they can improve their IT operations and productivity by using different tools. And tools keep changing because technology keeps evolving. So it's an evergreen kind of a business in many cases. Secondly, one is the services part, where the consulting is one aspect, but if you are actually hired to build a service for some client or some industry, it can be a pharma industry, manufacturing industry, FMCG, financial services, insurance, whatever. So you can, if you are hired to build something for them, then the business economics is a little different for that particular. You have to actually create software or connect different components, see what the client is already using and see what can be upgraded, what can be retained, how to modernize something, how to phase out something, how to maintain the old systems. All those things come into play as services.
Okay.
And lastly, the product business, where you might have created a product, which is a software product, like people have heard of names like SAP or Microsoft Windows or Office or whatever. These are products. So if you have a product of your own, you can actually sell it to the client and make sure that you make a product revenue out of that. So there are three business models that are actually operating in the IT service industry. So based on this preliminary understanding, how the companies are selling, we can now look at top IT companies, IT services companies which you know of in India. And the moment we, moment anybody opens their annual reports, it's the same words, right, everywhere, the same descriptions of things. So it's very hard to actually pinpoint exactly what they do differently. But there will be differences in terms of the products that they sell. So, for example, Infosys may have a product called as Finacle, which is used by as a core banking software by banks. The same product at TCS is called TCS Bank. So they have two different competing products. They might have different features, but essentially do the same thing. Then you will also have services that they offer to different industries, like I mentioned, the verticals like FMCG, pharma, manufacturing, financial services. They will provide the same technology services and combinations of that to the industry. So it's not a very dissimilar business. So you can actually interchange the vendor in many cases because the capability also might be more or less similar. People are also in the same industry for a long period of time. So there's not too much of differentiation going on. I think the real differentiation happens only in the consulting aspect, where you actually have a deep expertise and talent pool available to consult what is to be really used, what is not to be used, etc. That's the only differentiation. But broadly, it's very hard to distinguish what each of these companies do on a top-down basis.
Also, Ronak, Indian IT is largely about services companies. We don't see too many companies focused on building products. Now, what is the reason for that?
So, actually, that's a misnomer, because in the listed space, we don't have too many product companies. But in the unlisted space, there are several companies who have products. And even in the listed space, you will have products as a component of sales in many of these companies. So Indian companies, of course, by sheer density of B2C products that we use, like business, well, products that consumer use every day, we may not have too many of them. But actually, if you see the B2B side, business-to-business side, you will have a lot of products which are sold by Indian companies. I think some names at top of my mind I mentioned were like Finacle and banks, which are used by banks. Another product which many people would have heard of is Tally, is an accounting software. Then something called as Zoho, which is a customer relationship management software. Then there are antivirus software like QuickHeal. Then there is maybe an ERP software from Ramco or whatever. So there are several companies from India also who have their own products which are being sold, but in a business-to-business scenario, not from a business-to-customer scenario. So India has a thriving product ecosystem, but if you see the density of listed companies, you will not find too many of them. You will find many of them to be listed in the US or other developed markets, because there, over there, the economics is accepted in the listed space. Here, the economics is difficult to accept because product revenues can be extremely lumpy. But even that is changing now because the business model is shifting towards subscription kind of service, where the popular term is software as a service, SaaS. What most companies are doing now is trying to create a software as a service subscription where the client will actually just buy a subscription and pay monthly, and the software cost gets apportioned over a period of time, and the upgrades are essentially on demand because now the delivery of software has changed. If you want, we can go in detail of that also.
Okay. Definitely, Ronak.
So basically, software as a service is a new evolution in the way products are software is sold. It's not very new because it has been around for the past 30 years. I think Salesforce, which is a very well-known software as a service product, it's a CRM product, customer relationship management product. So if a customer, for example, if a bank is using Salesforce, the moment you call the bank as a customer for any query, your details automatically populate in the software and the agent can navigate through the problem and they can log the complaint, they can keep track of the complaint, they can send you resolution updates and whatever. So that CRM system is very well used in business enterprises of large sizes. So Salesforce actually pioneered that at scale when they started the business somewhere 30 years ago. But essentially this business model over a period of time, at that time when Salesforce started, it was a very new thing because at that time the way software was sold, a product was sold, was you buy a expensive license for the software and use it for over a period of 5 to 7 years. Then a new version will come, then you upgrade to the new version and that cycle would repeat. So there was a steady 5 to 7 year kind of a cycle for the product, and in between you would then give updates and patches to the customer and make sure the software functions for a period of time. And if it gets too old, you will then drop support for the older version and the new version will be the current version. So that way you kept on selling new and new product. But now the business is such a way that, like how people use Gmail nowadays, we don't know how Gmail updates in the backend, but we continue to see a Gmail interface which is adding new and new features periodically. So it's an ongoing development, ongoing deployment of the product, and you always get the latest version of software no matter what happens. That is the new version of the business that is coming up, where now you can actually pay a monthly fee to get access to that same product. So these features are now run on cloud. So previously, when you have to install a software, you would have to install a physical CD into a company's server, and that will run on the local company's premises, and every branch of the company will run some software which is locally run in that particular branch. But now, because of the internet, which is spread everywhere, and we have cloud computing as a technology where software no longer has to run on your computer, but it has to run basically inside a browser. So we open a Google Chrome or a Internet Explorer browser and put in the right link, and the software just loads up. You log in, authenticate yourself, and start using the software. So that kind of a delivery mechanism has also changed, because of which subscriptions have become more popular, and that way many product companies have got a new lease of life by getting a steady stream of revenue and not having to depend on that occasional upgrade cycle which would come after every 5-7 years. So that's the new evolution.
That's interesting, Ronak. So now, you know, investors wanting to invest in shares of IT services companies, what should they be watching out for?
Primarily, one of the best starting point is to understand, do you really get the business? So it's easy to oversimplify that we are sending work from expensive areas to cheaper areas like India or other places. But then why is India having a competitive advantage over other geographies? So why not other cheap countries like Vietnam or China or whatever? Why does India get a dominating thing? That was a thing of the past. Now many other economies are also developing. So Philippines is developing. Eastern Europe has been developing for a long period of time. So you are seeing Mexico has been developing for a period of time now. So you are seeing other geographies picking up the same business model that Indian companies have followed. The only challenge over here is most people tend to just look at the operating part of this business, like the operating margins of this business and how this business actually operates. But to maintain the operating margin, there is a HR process that is called as a pyramid. So the pyramid is a very well-known HR concept in the IT industry, where imagine a pyramid where the bottom of the pyramid is essentially your lesser experienced employees. Mm-hmm. Middle part of the pyramid is your middle management team. And the top part, the smaller part of the triangle of that pyramid, is the senior management or the leaders of the business. So at any given point, we realize that as people get more and more experience, the middle part starts growing in size. As more experienced people stay in the middle management, and the bottom part starts reducing. What does that naturally mean? If you are expecting a salary growth over a period of time, employee has to be kept paid at inflation rate. So your cost of retaining the employee also keeps going up over a period of time. But your margins at which you sell the product may not change at that frequency. You might be selling to an industry where the growth rates might be different. So they may say, okay, we will not follow your cost of inflation. Mm-hmm. We will follow our industry's cost of inflation. So our industry has not grown maybe in the last year. So we will not give you the additional hike. That means the IT company in India who is selling services to that industry has to take a price cut or not grow the price for that particular service that they're selling. That means the expensive employees become a liability on the margin. So what IT companies have been doing is they have created this, like I said earlier, the university kind of approach where they recruit a large quantity of freshers and they train them over a period of 12 to 18 months and make them eligible to work on projects. And that way they keep the costs low by having a good mix of more experienced people, less experienced people at a large employee pool, then somewhat experienced people or a little bit senior people in the middle management pool, and senior management team remains constant across all these things. So that way, most of the IT companies have maintained the pyramid. Now, why does the pyramid work in case of India? It's because India is, the largest, factory for engineering graduates, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you have so many engineers coming out, graduating every year, but with different employment prospects. So, for example, somebody who may graduate as a civil engineer may not immediately be employable in the civil engineering industry, even though that might be the passion of that person. IT industry has realized that why not take any engineer who has come out of the system, train them in IT, and deploy them on different projects. Mm-hmm. Now, IT industry, because of this, because of their previous operations history, has had a very lucrative, entry point for many of these engineers. So people would have had to choose, unfortunately, between unemployment or IT industry. So IT industry right. became like a default port of call for many engineers from, say, a tier 3, tier 4 city, may not have good opportunities in their native place, probably would go to Bangalore, Mysore, Hyderabad, Pune, or Gurgaon and join any of the IT services and become part of the ranks. So that way, many of the people have started by default in the industry in our country. So that constant stream of people keeps coming in. So you have a good mix of freshers coming into the system periodically, and you maintain that. So I think that aspect, although is a little oversimplified, is more complex because as India evolves, so, I mean, this is a theory, may not have been proven yet, but as we are going into the Make in India and Atmanirbharta kind of campaigns, we realize that we have to also shore up our manufacturing base. So it might actually take a lot of engineers away from this pool of freshers, which otherwise was readily available to the IT industry, and they might go to their respective industries and become engineers over there. That's an interesting trend which might have to watch out for. But otherwise, the ecosystem of business remains the same. You have engineers coming in, the freshers will come in, the IT services, as long as the company has kept track of technology and kept up with it, they will be able to sell services to all clients and all their needs can be fulfilled by the same IT business. You just have to train your employees in that technology. So, for example, if cloud computing was not very popular 10 years back, now it is a default service that most IT companies sell. Right. So if an engineer joining at 10 years back in this industry has not kept up with what has happened in the cloud business through either internal training or personal training, they will actually be less desirable to retain by the IT company today. So that's where you see a lot of these news coming up of companies firing a lot of people over a period of time. So there was a cycle of hiring and firing that keeps continuing in the industry. So this is what happens when the firings happen, where people have not kept up or they are no longer relevant from skills point of view or they are refusing to upgrade for some reason. They may not find a place in the industry. And essentially, if you see the pecking order of companies by, say, revenue size or market cap, if they are listed, you will see the top companies are slightly more lenient in absorbing, whereas the bottom companies in the revenue pool may not get the best candidates every time. So you really have to pay a lot of money to get somebody out of the larger companies to join you and give a career path to that person. So it's a difficult challenge for smaller companies to scale when the hiring becomes like it was last year. You have to pay 2 times, 3 times to retain people. Smaller companies don't have the kind of balance sheets to pull that off. So it's a difficult industry if you're not scaled over a bit of time. But if you have scaled and you're running a steady state business, you will be able to manage your operations very well.
So, Ronak, how does an investor figure out this pyramid mix in a company?
So over a period of time, analysts have been very demanding. People like me who have been very demanding, they would have forced people to disclose that, tell us what your pyramid is right now. So you will generally see most of these data points mentioned by the management as to how many of these employees are freshers, how many are hired recently, what is the attrition rate of the industry. That is, how many people have left the industry, left the company in the last 12-month period, either voluntarily or involuntarily. They'll mention all of that. The industry has also started to mention a number called as utilization. So how many people they have hired, but how many are actually used. So for example, if utilization is 80%, that means out of all the people they are hired, 20% are actually not deployed on any active projects. They are either under training or under probation or whatever. So they also mention metrics like your offshore and on-site mix. So how many employees are actually offshore, that is on Indian soil, and how many employees are actually on-site at the client side. So if a client is in the US, you may also need some employees near the client to provide a better service. That is on-site. So these metrics have been disclosed, I think, over a decade now by many IT companies because analysts and investors demanded that this is an opaque business. We can't see a factory or a manufacturing plant like we see in other businesses. How do we know what is going on? So most of these metrics have been voluntarily disclosed, and they have now become part of the common disclosure. It is not mandatory by regulators. It's common disclosure by the industry. Like the auto company disclose auto number volumes every month. It's like a common disclosure the industry decided, okay, let's disclose this. And if it is not disclosed, people actually ask them in the conference call, what is the number? It's not there in your financial statements.
Now, IT companies are sounding pretty positive in their commentary about future earnings, but the market seems to be skeptical, and then you're seeing that in the way IT shares have been underperforming. So what explains this disconnect, Ronak?
So I think markets are usually forward-looking. They will see if there is a recession coming in various industries, if capital raising is not going to be very easy for companies, then they may not be able to grow at the same rate. And most IT companies work on a concept called the IT budget. So if you are a services business and you are servicing your clients in different industries, they will basically have a percentage of revenue kind of a idea in their mind. So a CEO of a financial services company will know that if my revenue is $100, I'll probably spend $20 on maintaining my IT infrastructure and services. So if that industry is not growing, for example, if the industry goes from 100 and goes to 90 in that 1 year period, then naturally the percentage of revenue that they will spend on IT will also be a little lower. They may not prioritize some of the new things that they wanted to do with IT services. They would say, okay, let's keep the systems running, but no new investment will happen for a period of time till our growth comes back on track. So that actually affects the ability of IT services companies to grow in that particular sector. Now, if multiple sectors are showing signs of impending recession because of whatever macro reasons, the market might believe that, okay, IT companies might definitely get their business, but it may be at a slower pace than before. There might be an implicit expectation of sales growth by the market, because of which market says, okay, if I'm not getting this sales growth, then I will not pay so much of a price to earning multiple or price to sales multiple or a price to cash flow multiple for these businesses. And hence, the price would have retrenched over a period of time. And also, we should understand that last year, if you see the valuations, they also move in cycles, right? So IT company valuations have actually gone up quite dramatically last year. So especially in the mid to small cap IT businesses, the middle size IT businesses, their valuations have actually outpaced the larger, more stable players because of the faster growth expectation. So that's an interesting trend, that market fluctuations also affect on the valuations of the companies. But underlying positivity of the IT businesses, they will naturally have, because they see the life cycle of the services being implemented. They see the industries wanting to spend more on IT and upgrade their systems or maintain their systems. So that natural inclination of maintaining a steady state of business will always be there. So there will always be positive commentary from the industry, because technology keeps on improving, keeps on being adopted in a different way. It's not a stagnant business where once you install something, that's it for the next 20 years. It's not like a factory capex. Even factory capex is not stagnant. You actually have to maintain it over a period of time. But over there, you have internal people to maintain. In IT, the problem is because of the scale of the customer's business, you may not have enough internal talent pool available to maintain. whereas the IT company has already hired so many people in India, they can easily maintain the same IT services remotely at a much cheaper cost. So IT services being positive has actually been a trend. You see, even in the periods where, say, 2017-18, when IT services actually had a revenue dip, that's a good indication for investors to see that what was the commentary like. And even at that time, there was rumors of a recession, but the commentary was positive overall, that people are spending on IT, we are getting new projects, our deal sizes are increasing, and all the commentary you hear today was the same at that time also. So, of course, market is anticipating a recession, which may happen, so we don't know that. But IT services being positive is not a very new thing. They have always been positive because the technology's nature of business is that you always remain on an update cycle over a period of time.
Okay, Radhak. Now, you just briefly referred to the firings in the IT sector. Now, just coming to that, now 6 years back, IT companies were laying off staff in droves. There was talk about automation making many jobs redundant, companies saying that they don't need so many people. Now, that has dramatically changed in the last couple of years. We've seen aggressive hiring. Now, wages appear to be stabilizing somewhat, but attrition still remains a major concern. Two questions here. One is that the automation that companies were talking about in the past, is that well on track? And secondly, how long do you see the boom phase for IT professionals continuing?
So again, I'll answer it in reverse order. The boom phase for IT professionals can only continue as long as they stay relevant on the technology's upgrade cycle. So like I mentioned earlier, if the new technology is being implemented, it's cloud computing, then you have to upgrade your employees, and people also have to understand how different implementations happen, what are the new developments in the cloud ecosystem, how can you help your clients in a better way. That has to continuously happen. If that doesn't happen, then the professional becomes less and less useful as time goes by. And they will stagnate in their career, maybe they will not get increments or even grow as a professional, or they may also be laid off if the requirement is not there for that old knowledge that they have. That is one way IT companies retrench or get rid of employees who are not relevant in the ecosystem or who cannot be trained or maybe refusing to train for various personal reasons also. That is one way of firings that happen. Attrition is actually a very major problem for the industry, because what happens is, if you see all the companies, okay, all the large, small companies and even the biggest companies in the world, attrition is somewhere around 20%. Now, if you just take a step back and see 20% people who are working in the company have left in 1 year, that means in the next 5 years, all employees will be replaced, theoretically.
Yeah.
So it's very hard to run a business when that kind of a churn happens in a company. But the nature of the business is such that you will have a lot of churn at the, say, 1 to 5 year kind of a period, or sorry, the experience of employees, where they are experimenting. So some of them will learn something, they will get a little bit higher salary somewhere else, and they will jump to other companies. That is one thing, because the reason is this industry, although they hire freshers from the engineering colleges, these are not immediately employable freshers. You have to spend some time in training them in relevant technologies, making them aware of how the IT industry works, where their role will fit into the overall scheme of the project that they're going to work on, who is the client, what is the end industry's requirement. So all those things are modularized as training programs, and they are fed into the minds of these people. And over a period of, say, 12 to 18 months, they actually become employable. So there is a significant cost that the company bears right from the hiring date of a fresher till the next 12 to 18 months to just retain that person. So you pay them salary to basically learn over a period of time and make them billable. And what does billable mean? So if you just cursory take a number, like the revenue that the companies make in dollar terms, divided by the number of employees that they have, the current average is somewhere around $35,000 per year as the cost of that revenue per employee number.
Okay.
Now, of course, the employee is not getting salary of $35,000. The employee might be getting maybe 1/30 of that as a salary. Although that employee's value to the company is $35,000 per year, they might be getting a much smaller amount of that as salary because they are still developing as a professional. So there the churn can be very high because people might just jump for a little bit higher salary because, of course, people want more and more money for the same work that they do. In the middle management, when the firings happen, the attritions happen, they're essentially either for, like I said, performance related, the performance is not up to the mark and people have to be let go, or people are moving for better prospects because they want to work with larger teams, larger companies, different projects in the same industry. They may have gotten monotonous assignments so far. They have not grown in terms of pay over a period of time. They would have probably not had a chance to get promoted. So these kind of attritions also happen. So that is a cyclical aspect where I think every 4 or 5 years you will see a churn of people. But the attrition number has been so far very high because of two important trends that happened in the last couple of years. One is work from home. So many companies have realized that if you want to retain people and employees are demanding a flexible working schedule, then you have to provide that as an option to retain people. Second is salaries don't grow at very fast pace in this industry. So an average number of salary growth is about 3 to 5% in this industry. So if anybody is offering you 20%, 30% more, that might be a attractive proposition because that is something you will earn in the next 5-6 years as an increment if you stay where you are right now. So people usually take an offer from somebody, then renegotiate that with the company. The company they are working currently might say no, so they will leave to the other company. So that cycle has happened in the last couple of years. But that doesn't continue. It's not a thing where it happens every year and you will have a chance to jump every year. These cycles have happened in the past also. And the way IT companies have dealt with it is basically strengthen the base of the pyramid by hiring more inexperienced people and training them. So their overall costs remain in the same range. So if you see the margins over a 10-year period, you will see more or less in the same band of margins. They will not have moved very dramatically lower or higher. So IT companies manage this business in a different way than how employees see their role in that business. So I think that's the reason we are seeing the stark number of attrition, stark number of salaries being given to at crazy levels to people. But that cycle will not continue. It has happened in the past, and cycles have also gone through the boom and bust. So we have seen this happen before. If investors are really interested to learn about this, they can actually go to the period of 2016, 2017, 2018 and just see the commentary at that time. Or go even 5 years before that and see the commentary at that time. So it's actually a repeatable cycle which happens every 4 to 6 years. And we can actually study the impact on people, on the business, on the margins very vividly.
Ronak, the second part of the question was about automation. Do you see that as a major risk to the boom phase that IT professionals are enjoying at this point in time?
So automation, again, is a function of upgrading how you use technology. So let me give you a context over here. So previously, if you wanted to write, previously, that means 15 years back, if you wanted to write a piece of software or a service, you actually had to, you had a very limited base already available to build on top of. So you basically have to rewrite a lot of these programs and customize everything from scratch for the customer's needs. Now, because of something called as an API, which is called as an the expansion is application programming interface. It's basically a service which is pre-built. And all you have to do is connect that service to the function that you require. So for example, if you are if you're designing a software for a bank, the bank might require a core banking system, a transaction management system, or a customer relationship management system. All these systems they will want to integrate, and the employee who is there at the bank branch has to have access to all these things so that they can give relevant service to the customer who is standing in front of them. So all these systems can be just they can be used as an API, and you can call these services at will. To give you a context from our day-to-day lives, so for example, we as individuals, we might do a lot of things ourselves, right? We might cook our own food, clean our own houses, wash our own cars. We can do a lot of things on ourselves. Even in pandemic, we have learned to even cut our own hair. So all these services which we thought we have to rely on somebody else, we could do ourselves. So imagine we hire a barber, hire a maid, hire a car cleaner, hire somebody to iron and wash our clothes. So do basically you hire these services for the specific activity. In the same way, in IT, an API can be hired or recruited for a specific activity, and you can pay for that service to the end software provider. So in the same way, that automation has happened where these services have become easy to integrate and make a cohesive system out of that. So for example, you no longer have to write everything from scratch. You can automate a lot of these systems by just connecting all these different components in different places. And because you have seen how they work together, you can actually optimize for making them work together better. That is the role of the IT services company. So that is one way automation has reduced the labor or effort of deploying something. So what would have taken, say, 1,000 people to deploy something, now takes 100 people to deploy something. Another innovation that happened in automation is the ability to write softwares faster. So if you happen to design everything from scratch, you can actually copy-paste a lot of the code that is there and then integrate only smaller aspects of the code to make sure that the code is customized enough for your requirement. So the software writing part has also reduced dramatically. So where you would require 100 coders, for example, to write some software, 10 people can do that job. Infrastructure management has become more automated. So where networking equipment managed remotely, you need to have people actually on site to manage the servers and the network properly at the client side. But now you can only have, say, 5-6 people running the entire data center, and the rest of the work can be just remotely done by software-driven networks, where these networks are basically softwares which you can manage remotely from anywhere in the world. And, of course, in a secured manner. It's not open to everyone to access, but in a secured manner, secure channel, you can run these things very well. Because of cloud computing, you no longer need to deploy people on the client side to install these servers and physical computers or data centers at the client. You can actually just go to Amazon or Microsoft or Google or whatever, IBM, run a cloud service component over there, rent a cloud services over there, and deploy for the client remotely from anywhere. So just like any startup in India would not have to invest in any of the IT hardware anymore, they just have to have a AWS account and run an Amazon cloud and start their business directly. So that is the automation that has happened. So every time automation happens, some of the manual aspect of that job disappears. It's no longer required because technology has moved on. But the integration and complexity has also increased. So you need different skill sets. That's why you have to retrain yourself. So the automation definitely has happened, but like any of the automation or mechanization we see in our day-to-day lives, it is a part of evolution of any business process. So in that way, automation definitely has happened, but that is not the cause of attrition as a direct correlation. It is one of the reasons of attrition is automation and people are no longer required, but people have a choice to update. People have a choice to stay in the system, learn new things, and be relevant in that new ecosystem also. So I think automation is a continuous component. So if you go long enough back, say 30 years ago, you had mainframe systems. Now nobody even knows the word mainframe, but mainframe is essentially a giant computer which handles a lot of transactions at a centralized level. From mainframe, we went to what we use today as a thin client, where we just have a laptop and the browser has the application running. You don't even need to worry what is in the backend. It just keeps running automatically. So that evolution required an upgradation. Then you have cloud systems that required some automation. So everything which has evolved has automated some of the previous manual labor and made it more and more easier to deploy and implement and manage things. So that is the automation in the industry. So it's not a bad thing to automate things and scale over a period of time, but that has actually reduced some of the effort for the IT services businesses. So you can actually optimize your hiring that way based on where you are in the technology updation cycle.
Ronak, I would like to wrap up this podcast with two questions, stock specific. The first one is on Wipro. Now, it was the most talked about stock at the height of the dot-com boom way back in 2000. And while it's still counted among the top tier IT companies, the stock performance has been quite middling. Now, what do you think is the reason for that? And do you see this trend changing anytime soon?
So because we hold Wipro in one of our schemes, I may not want to give a forward-looking statement. I can just talk about what has happened in the past. So if you see Wipro's sales execution, sales growth over a period of time compared to some of its peers, the larger IT companies globally as well as in India, you will see that they have been growing at a much slower rate than other people. So that's a clear indication saying that there is something in the execution of this business which has not been correct in the past. Because if the entire industry is growing at, say, 10% annual compounding rate of growth, and this business is only growing at, say, 5%, like half of that trajectory, then of course there is something wrong in the execution of this business. And this is where I mentioned that when you talk to salespeople about how IT services are sold or products are sold, you have a very different perspective on execution and what actually happens when a contract is negotiated, when the contract starts to deliver, when the money starts to flow in, and how the relationship goes over a period of time. And that is where the attrition part also comes in. So if you have high attrition at the sales level, then you also see a lot of these projects do not get renewals after a while. So you have to then spend more effort in growing that number from the previous base that you have grown to. So if you have a consistent sales execution, then the account stays with you for longer. You can incrementally charge them more based on inflation, adjusted pricing, and you can keep growing in that business. But the moment you have a lot of churn in the execution side of the business, then you will see some projects faltering, clients saying, okay, I don't want to now work with this company. We'll probably go with a competitor because they have a better execution team. Or the entire execution team has gone to some competitor and then you want to switch to the person who has been servicing you rather than the company who is servicing you. So that happens a lot in this industry. So you get a different perspective with Wipro that they have had a slower execution pace, and that is the reason why you no longer count it as one of the topmost companies. But they have been changing their ways over a period of time. They have had management changes also. So it remains to be seen what happens in the future.
Also, now earlier there used to be a clear lead for either Infosys or TCS as the bellwether of the IT services sector. But now the that mantle seems to be changing every couple of quarters, and there's no big difference in the number of buy or sell calls on these stocks among analysts which track the sector. What do you see as the strengths and shortcomings of both these companies?
So actually, I would like to dissuade people from looking at the quarterly recommendations or targets that most sell-side reports have. Although it's useful to track minor differences over a bit of time, but just zoom out a little bit and just see where Indian IT companies stack up compared to their global peers. So if you look at a company like Accenture, which is almost twice the size in revenue as TCS, but the profits are in the same range. So what is the different thing that they are doing versus, say, a TCS or an Infosys? Then you have a Cognizant, you have an IBM. So interestingly, if you see some of the trajectory over the past 15 years of the global IT companies, and I would count Indian companies also as global IT companies because 90% plus of their money comes from outside of India. So when you see that, from that context, you will realize that there's always this market share gain and market share loss. So over the past 10 years, most IT services companies, including Accenture, have tremendously benefited from IBM losing a lot of ground from their past highs that they have seen. Mm-hmm. So IBM's global consulting business, which was one of the largest services business in the world in the 90s when they started that business, that actually has been steadily losing market share in the last 15 years to most of these other IT companies. Secondly, contract sizes have actually started to grow in size. So where you saw 10 million, 100 million used to be the peak for many of the contract sizes, now you can actually get a $1 billion contract also for a multi-year, like 7-8 years kind of a deal, and you are allowed to execute over a long period of time. You're getting more larger runway because you've already proven your capability. And over there, you are seeing TCS, Infosys, Wipro, HCL Tech, all these companies are equal, on equal footing in many cases. They're actually negotiating, winning those contracts at the same scale, along with companies like Cognizant and Accenture, etc. So I think quarter to quarter, you might see disparity in the commentary, and you may be tempted to read between the lines saying, okay, this is doing better than that. But actually, they're all in the same, I would say, sea. They're in different boats, but on the same ocean. They're basically going in the same current towards a growing industry. Some person might be at a low tide. Some person might be on a high tide. So we have to observe them over a period of time only to know that which company is consistently doing better. And maybe that company's prospects might continue to do better if the execution continues in that particular manner. So I would dissuade people from looking at from quarter to quarter. It's very hard to predict, first of all, and it's very hard to get good quality information about what the industry actually is doing on a quarter to quarter basis. On the overall annualized basis, you will figure out a lot of things. Okay, this is what people had said 2 years back, which is now happening actually in the business. This is what people had said last quarter is going to happen probably 2 years later in that business, in the actual numbers point of view. So I think I would discourage everyone to look at it from a quarter-on-quarter basis and just do a longer, maybe 3 year or 5 year cycles are better to understand.
Ronak, that was a wonderful conversation. I really enjoyed it. Thanks for patiently explaining a lot of things about the IT industry. You simplified quite a few jargons and have also given some good insight in terms of what investors should be keeping an eye out for. I'm hopeful that our listeners will have plenty to take away from this podcast.
Thank you so much, Santosh, for inviting me on your podcast. And I hope all these things were useful. So as an analyst, you keep tracking them, but it is a rare opportunity to actually summarize and simplify a lot of these things. So thank you so much for giving me the opportunity.
My pleasure, Ronak, and I look forward to more of such conversations.